Welcome to the LGBTQIA+ Atastica Graphics Digital Symposium podcast series. We hope you enjoy the series. If you have any comments or questions, drop us a line on our Discord server and join us for the roundtable discussion of the series on November 20th, 2021 via Zoom. For details, go to fantasticajournal.com and select the upcoming events heading. That's Fantastica with a K. Details are in the podcast info. The discussions are free and open to all, but registration is required for each Zoom panel. There are 5 panels in total.
This podcast is part of Panel 5, Defying Patriarchal Expectations. The Zoom discussion will take place on November the 20th at 4:30 p.m. GMT time. This podcast is presented by Shirul Chucky Parma Patel, who is founder of Fantastica Journal. Her first monograph, The Shape of Fantasy, investigates the narrative structures of epic fantasy, incorporating ideas from science, philosophy, and literary theory. Her next research project, Mothers, Maternities, and Matriarchs, examines systems of power and oppression in American fantasy. You can find out more about Parma Patel at www.doc-fantasy.com. Her podcast today is entitled, But Where Do the Babies Come From? A look at recent retcons of DC's Wonder Woman.
Hello, my name is Chucky, or Dr. Gerald Palmer Patel. This discussion today is the first tiny step, of a larger project, and so it is very undeveloped, and I appreciate any feedback. The project in question is a monograph on mothers, maternities, and matriarchies in American epic fantasy. And Wonder Woman is just one of some 30 texts that I plan to look at. Of course, the problem with studying epic fantasy, and one of the reasons I suspect that more academics don't tackle the genre as a whole, is because there is so much material that you need to examine. I'm including Wonder Woman in this categorization of epic. She first appeared in 1941, which makes her 80 years old just last month. According to the Wonder Woman wiki, she had 27 writers. That's 27 reimaginings and reinterpretations of a woman who, if you think about it, is the ideal woman. She's given the title Wonder because of how amazing she is. So admittedly, my interest in Wonder Woman isn't specifically from an LGBTQIA+ approach. My interest is in this depiction of an ideal woman alongside an ideal society of women, the Amazons, and how LGBTQIA+ becomes incorporated into that, or how if you have a society without men, how would relationships develop? The Amazonians are interesting because they are at once a family unit as well as a romantic one. They are both sisters and lovers, but it's not depicted, at least overtly, in incestuous ways. Instead, romance seems to be the natural bonds of sisterhood. I should add, of course, that out of the 27 authors listed on the wiki, I think only 6 are women. I'm not sure if any of the 27 identify as LGBTQIA+ themselves. So it goes without saying that Wonder Woman and the Amazons are a white, male, patriarchal view of the ideal woman and a heteronormative view of lesbianism. And so the approach I'm taking for this LGBTQIA+ symposium and podcast series is largely an intersectional one, because I'm of the opinion that the fight for LGBTQIA+ rights is tied with feminism. It's the same fight. It's all bound together in that binary of men and women, the idea of masculinity and femininity presented as opposite to each other, rather than a beautiful spectrum of color and shades of gray. As I started reading Wonder Woman, it quickly became obvious to me that each author is bringing a lot of their own baggage about both LGBTQIA+ rights and feminism to the party, and they completely missed the point of both movements. The title of my presentation, But Where Do the Babies Come From?, is meant to highlight this irony. It's along the same lines as the question, but which one is the man in the relationship? It doesn't matter. There isn't one. In the same way, it shouldn't matter whether or not Wonder Woman, or Princess Diana, has genetic material from a male. But just over the last decade, the authors of Wonder Woman put so much thought into her origin story that I think it speaks to an anxiety about childbirth and parentage that is forced on the LGBTQIA+ community. So the title of my podcast is also to bring attention to the perception of family in the family unit in fantasy narratives and in LGBTQIA+ narratives. My work on mothers and matriarchy started because of epic fantasy's obsession with lineage. You know, like in The Hobbit, you have Thorin Oakenshield, son of Thrain, grandson of Thor, etc., etc. There's no mentions of mothers in this lineage. like Thrawn sprang fully formed from the earth or something. But when you have a character like Diana who canonically is formed from the earth, all of a sudden we start questioning, who is her dad? If she doesn't have a dad, can we even consider her a person? Because it's okay to focus on patriarchal lineage, but parthenogenesis, which is when a female creates a child without a male, that stimulates deep-seated horror. And of course, Barbara Creed talks about this phenomenon at length in her book Monstrous Feminine, with her evaluation of the Aliens franchise. But my focus on parthenogenesis today is the obvious implications this fear has towards the LGBTQIA+ community with reproduction and reproduction rights. You hear of all sorts of interesting legal cases where parental rights become a question with couples using artificial insemination. I remember one case where citizenship was the problem, and the courts originally ruled that parenthood depends on the male seed. And this idea is so deeply rooted in our society. It goes all the way back to the Greeks and Asclepius' Oresteia. The play concludes with a legal argument between the older justice systems of the fairies and the new justice system of Zeus, which boils down to a justice system between a male and a female, or women. In ancient Greece, women were not considered citizens, and the justice system acted accordingly. In the play, Apollo supports this divide by stating that, quote, the woman you call the mother of the child is not the parent, just a nurse to the seed. The man is the source of life, end quote. He uses Athena as proof that, quote, the father can father forth without a mother, end quote, as Athena was born fully grown from her father Zeus's head. This idea, I think, is pivotal to reading Wonder Woman because the comic series rewrites Greek mythology repeatedly. For 70 years, the origin story for Diana is that she is formed from clay by Queen Hippolyta. In 2012, DC retconned the series with the New 52. In Wonder Woman Volume 1, Blood, author Brian Azarel destroys this origin myth. First, he introduces the idea that, quote, Wonder Woman is the perfect Amazon. No male seed created her, end quote. And so we have this idea of perfection coming from purity. Male has not tainted her. She is truly a virgin birth. Except the Amazons don't treat her like this miraculous creation. They call her clay instead of Diana as an insult. They bully her. Quote, I left my home. The fact that I was created from clay, it made me, I didn't belong. I felt different from all my sisters, end quote. So rather than a utopian, Azarello's Amazons are not a peaceful, sisterly society. In fact, they're scornful, suspicious, angry, and are bullies. Azarello later reveals that the story of Wonder Woman being created from clay is a lie. This revelation is made to both the character of Wonder Woman and to her audience. Because as I said, for 70 years, we have a fairly consistent origin story. And Azarello craps all over that. Excuse my language, but it makes me angry. The interesting thing about this depiction, I think, is how it establishes and prioritizes a heterosexual relationship for reproduction and depicts it in an incredibly toxic way. Hippolyta talks about a relationship with Zeus as one of possession. Quote, quickly I learned that possessing a god has little to do with keeping him, end quote. Their relationship starts because they're physically fighting, violently, with weapons, and their fighting turns to passion and sex. Hippolyta says, quote, we were glorious, strength supporting strength, sinews entwined, absolute control, given up, end quote. However, the imagery that accompanies this text tells another story. The focus is on the female face, relinquishing control, experiencing ecstasy. Zeus does not relinquish control. Unfortunately, Grant Morrison's Earth One series continues this depiction of dominance. Although it's been praised for its depiction of lesbian relationships, I have a lot of problems with the text. Published in 2016, Volume 1 begins with an image of Hercules and Hippolyta, with Hercules overtly masculine, bulging muscles, hairy, big body, torso, limbs. Hippolyta is on her knees in a pig pen, in chains with Hercules yanking on them. She prays to Aphrodite and is given the strength to kill him. After she does so, she says, quote, hear me, sisters, Amazons, rise up, cast off your chains, cast off the yoke of men, and men, end quote. So the Amazons reject the men and the world of men, And their lesbianism is part of this rejection, as it's part of an extremely distorted, toxic depiction of feminism, one that is grounded in misandry, hatred towards men. And you have this stereotypical phobic idea, which takes a hostile view towards both feminism and lesbianism. That is, if you're a feminist, you're a lesbian because you hate men. Now, Wonder Woman's character herself challenges this perception, and she challenges the society she was raised in. And admittedly, I've only read Volume 1 so far, so I'm not sure how this develops. But another problem is that Morrison's depiction of the lesbian relationships between the Amazons is not the sort of loving relationship that you would find in the works of, say, Tilly Walden or Noelle Stevenson. Walden and Stevenson both depict more natural, normal relationships in their works, which I highly recommend for anyone wanting to read fantastic graphic novels with positive depictions of LGBTQIA+. In contrast, Morrison's depiction reeks of male fantasy. We see the women celebrating in an almost bacchic frenzy. They're dancing on a fryer. There's a close-up image of a woman lying on her back with another woman pouring wine on her neck and a third leaning over to kiss her. While it is refreshing to see graphic depictions of lesbianism, both the writer and illustrator are men, and it's really obvious from the depictions here that it's their idea, or even fantasy, of lesbianism rather than actual depiction of lesbian relationships. Diana herself is in a relationship with another Amazon, Mela. Every year, the Amazons celebrate the defeat of Hercules, with Diana playing Hercules and Mela as champion defeating her. Diana is tired of this repeated performance, but her request to play champion is denied. Amongst the celebration, Steve Trevor crash lands on the planet, and he is injured. Men, of course, are not allowed on the island, as they hate men, so Diana needs to sneak around and find a way to get Trevor home to his doctors. For that reason, during the celebration, although she is playing Hercules, she defeats Mela and as champion asks for tribute in the form of Mela's plane. Mela's expression here is extreme outrage. Quote, "She broke with tradition. She rejected me. She took my title and my plane," end quote. We're given very little knowledge of Diana and Mela's relationship before this event, but it's clear that Mela sees this symbolic ceremonial defeat as one of rejection. And so, just like Azzarello's version, relationships are depicted as one conquering another. But here, it's between two female characters rather than a male-female-hetero relationship. Relationships for the Amazonians is one of submission, and we see this constantly throughout Volume 1. For example, when Diana is brought back to the island to be tried for her crimes in helping a man, she's presented in chains, but she says, quote, "I surrender myself to you in loving submission to the will of Hippolyta," end quote. This dominance and submission motif is overt throughout. I should add here that I have nothing against BDSM. My problem is that the Earth One series presents all the lesbian relationships on the island as one of dominance and submission. There's no suggestion that relationships are complicated and varied between person and person. Repeatedly, we see that it is a sexual fantasy of lesbian relationships rather than a realistic depiction. This is noted by one of the characters themselves, Beth, who says, quote, "You're from a paradise island of science fiction lesbians with a sign of bondage," end quote. I'm not sure what Morrison hopes to accomplish by pointing out lesbianism as sexual fantasy so explicitly, whether he was attempting to deconstruct it, but it doesn't work within Volume 1. And again, I'm aware that the series is a trilogy, which I simply haven't had time to read yet, and so the remainder of the work might deconstruct these ideas. However, and this is perhaps my personal opinion rather than an academic one, but as someone who studies epic fantasy and often read lengthy series, I think each book needs to motivate the reader to continue the series. And part of that means establishing the tone, themes, and its underlying messages right from the first installment. While it's possible that Morrison's setting up this distorted view of lesbianism in order to deconstruct it later, there's not enough hints in the first volume to indicate that this is the direction the series will take. Morrison also concludes the volume with a confirmation of the origin story that Azzarello retconned, but this time Diana's father is Hercules instead of Zeus. And instead of passion, Queen Hippolyta created Diana from Hercules' seed as a mean for revenge. Quote, "You are my revenge on Hercules, Diana. That's that his line would yield no sons, only daughters bred to conquer and subdue man's world. Of my anger you were born," end quote. So this retcon of Diana's origin story, this time, is an extremely distorted feminist take, as it comes from a position of misandry, a hostility towards man leading to a birth of a child who has been bred to destroy the world of men. Thankfully and luckily, Greg Rucka's retcon, which is the last one I read, undoes some of the damage started by Azrael and continued by Morrison. Published in 2017 as part of DC Rebirth Retcon, the first line of Volume 1, The Lies, starts, quote, "Something's happening in my memory. The story keeps changing," end quote. Rucka takes the contradictory origin stories and sets it as the theme of his series in an overtly metafictional way. He introduces both origin stories, the one of Diana made from clay and the other with Diana made from sexual reproduction. But his representation of this latter origin story also rewrites it by setting a different tone and message. Quote, "The queen of the Amazons fell in love, and the man she chose was worthy of her heart," end quote. The accompanying graphic is tender, less aggressive passion, and more loving embrace. With this one page, Rucka sets the idea that even if the origin story of Diana is from a heterosexual relationship, it's from a loving one rather than a toxic, angry, feminist one. It makes this origin story more acceptable and isn't bound up in a distorted view of feminism. However, it also reestablishes heterosexuality as a normative and makes little reference to lesbian relationships. When I set out to read the first volumes of Azzarello's, Morrison's, and Rucka's Wonder Woman, I went into it fully expecting to love Morrison's version, because I knew it was applauded for its lesbian relationships. So perhaps I overhyped it for myself, because I walked away disappointed. I fully expected to hate Azzarello's, but actually, while I do hate his message, I think the story is one of the more creative of the three. Rucka's doesn't give you enough. It feels like you're dropped in the middle of the story and you have no idea what's going on, and before you can even start putting together the pieces, it stops abruptly. I only had time to read the first volumes of each before the symposium, so I'm looking forward to see how the series develops and whether they challenge some of the assumptions and readings I've made today for this podcast. I look forward to hearing your own thoughts on the Wonder Woman franchise and the depiction of the Amazons on November 20th. Thank you for listening, and take care.
We hope you enjoyed this discussion of DC's Wonder Woman and its examination of retcon representations. This podcast series continues with Elizabeth Boothby, who will be discussing queer representation in children's fantasy media through the animated show The Owl House by focusing on the queer, socially awkward adult mentor or mother figure.
If you enjoyed this series or have questions, join the conversation with us on Discord and on November 20th, 2021 for our Zoom webinars. For details, go to fantasticajournal.com and select the upcoming events heading. The discussions are free and open to all, but registration is required for each of the 5 Zoom panels. We look forward to seeing you there.